Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome back to the EPL Roundtable. I'm your host, Kevin DeVries, and as always, if you'd like to reach us at the podcast, you can do so by either tweeting us at EPL Roundtable or emailing us at EPLRoundtable@gmail.com. All right, we are here with a Tottenham update featuring Steve McGookin, who has been on here many times before, personal friend, and I'm very glad to have you back on to talk about everything that's been going on with Tottenham. He, of course, also former chairman of New York Spurs, which I also used to be a member of. Steve, very nice to have you on. Let's start chronologically with the match against Chelsea on Tuesday, obviously the first leg of the Carabao Cup semifinal. The first half, things were going very well, then the kind of proverbial tale of two halves with us just hanging on throughout the second half. But if you wouldn't mind getting into some of the finer details of that match.
Well, thanks very much for having me back on, Kev. It's good to be on with you again. And you know, it's an old cliche, but certainly it's definitely only half time in this tie. And I think the interesting thing to come out of
it. So a tale of two quarters, then, you could say.
Yeah, exactly. Sarri, you know, Sarri's one of those coaches that will have learned a lot from the last couple of encounters with us. And I actually don't forget, for all the people who talk about, you know, Poch needing to win a trophy, Sarri has never won one during his managerial career either, which gives the League Cup this year a little bit more of an edge. Not that, you know, semi-final of anything between these two teams ever needs an extra edge. So it's definitely, I think, it's going to be a challenge for us in the second leg on the 24th. But this game was a different match from when we beat them, obviously 3-1 in November, and they were greatly improved from then, and we were, especially in that second half, as you said, something, you know, of a shadow of our recent selves. But the upside for me was that being able to grind out an advantage like that and hold on is that it's the mark of a Spurs team that's determined and well organized rather than vulnerable, as we had been all too often in the most recent past. And you have to give a shout out to Gazzaniga as well for, you know, another clean sheet, another good performance. I think that what most people seem to be talking about was the VAR controversy over the offside before Harry's penalty. And, you know, it is what it is, and there'll always be incidents where managers will have a different opinion no matter what the video evidence appears to show. And where I think Sarri might have a point, though, is when he said about the referees not sort of fully understanding or grasping how best to use the technology. It's definitely a learning curve for them, and I think all we can hope for is that, you know, that we get a greater consistency as the system gets embedded. But I mean, as you know, Kev, I'm generally in favor of VAR and video replay in general, if it means that it catches incidents that the audience at home might see but that the ref might miss. But I think if this particular example proves anything, it just proves that there'll always be something to argue about because there always is. But generally, I was very pleased with our performance in the second half, especially as it was obvious that we were tiring. And Chelsea missed a couple of chances that I think they would rue afterwards. But as I say, generally speaking, it's set up well for the second leg. It is going to be tough for us to go there in the circumstances, especially with Sonny away. But I think if we can build on that resilience that we showed in the second half, then it's very encouraging. And of course, you know, we can talk about the team that's awaiting the winners in the final. I mean, that was just a monster performance by Man City at the against Burton in the other semi-final. Mm-hmm. And the debate here has been, I don't know if It has been on the boards as well, but certainly the debate here was, well, shouldn't they have taken their foot off the pedal and just eased up on their lower division rivals? But that's not how the game goes. That's not how the game goes. So, I mean, that was a good performance by City. Good performance by us. Chelsea will have their game faces on for the second leg. So it's going to be an interesting one on the 24th.
Yeah, in this match, I thought the interesting tactical tweak on Pochettino's side was how many long balls were played forward, trying to get specifically Son behind Christensen, who did very well to prevent that from happening. Do you think that was kind of a one-off tactic from Pochettino, or might we see more of that in the second leg?
I think a lot depends on how the game goes. If we were to score again, I think, and take a two goal lead over the two legs, I think that might change how we think about the game. But if we end up having to chase the game, we go a goal down or two goals down, then I think yes, that's exactly what you're going to see.
Yeah, obviously, not to Sun, though, as you mentioned. We'll have already departed for the Asian Cup, but we used to do that Toby to Delhi ball almost every match in Delhi's first season. So certainly no strangers to it on the whole.
Yeah, exactly. Some of them worked, some of them didn't. But it got to the stage now where opposing coaches will have watched us enough that they know that that's in the locker.
Yeah. The other takeaway from this match, and sorry I did not include this in the rundown, Paulo Gazzaniga won man of the match. Before the match, I had tweeted out that it was interesting that Gazzaniga got the go-ahead because a couple years ago, Poch got rid of the second keeper as your cup keeper notion. Mm. Remember, it used to be Vorm, and then in the final, we'd bring out Hugo, and then it just stopped being Vorm at all. Now we're seeing Gazzaniga start to get that, and considering the level of his performances and some of the shaky ones by Lloris, do you think that the whispers about Gazzaniga over Lloris deserve to get a little bit louder, or for you, is it no question you stick with your captain?
No, he definitely deserves to get louder, and the more encouragement we can give the kid by having more games to prove himself. I mean, we often say that what you need when a player breaks through into the team at first is a solid run of games, and I think what he needs is exactly that. It'll be interesting. I don't think he'll pick him on Sunday against United, but you never know. What a great dilemma to have, quite frankly. We have who we think is going to be our next keeper in waiting, where you never got the sense that Vorm was going to be the keeper that would take over from Hugo at any stage for a lengthy period, but everything I see of Gazzaniga is tremendously encouraging, and I hope he gets a solid run of games.
Yeah, and it's nice to see him doing well, because I've been kind of kicking myself about how well Paul Lopez did when he returned to Espanyol, because we didn't take up the clause to pick him up after he was on loan with us for a year, and if I'm right, never made an appearance. So there was a question as to what were we going to do next. And exactly. Gazzaniga is not that young. I think he's already like 27-ish. Mm-hmm. But if he can come through, obviously keepers have a longer shelf life than others. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens between the sticks.
That's young for a keeper, by the way. 27.
True.
To be playing at a top level in the Premier League, that's actually, you know, still he's still on an up curve.
Yes, agreed. Somebody that's not on the up curve anymore, unfortunately, is Moussa Dembele, who is being reported by numerous outlets to be en route to Beijing Guoan, for lack of a better pronunciation. This, of course, very sad news. We'll get into your feelings in a second. Just to frame it a little bit, Dembele, through an agent, through a journalist in the summer, basically said that his body wasn't up to the physical toll that the Premier League held. Steve, I'm sure you'll remember, in his first year with Tottenham against Manchester United, he picked up a hip injury that he just never shook off. For the rest of his time with us, never really had huge extended absences, just would had to be rested, had to be managed correctly to prevent any big things. Actually, this year was his largest amount of time missed, and that's technically an ankle. But what have you made of Moussa Dembele's time with Tottenham as it is seemingly coming to a close?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Poch once called him a genius, and I think, you know, that's not that much of a reach for the type of player that he was, and absolutely good luck to him in you know, this new chapter. I mean, it had been coming for a while, obviously. I mean, you and I even talked about it at the end of last season, and we didn't feel we were ready to replace him even at that stage, but we were prepared for the possibility that he might sign somewhere else. I mean, obviously he was injury prone, and I think that, you know, when you said about him picking up that hip injury, I think that was actually something that he might have had even in his last season at Fulham. But I'm not sure, totally sure about that. But certainly he was injury prone, as you say, and obviously depending on his fitness, this move, might be the best way for him to ease into the twilight of his career. But by the way, I'm not sure I totally agree with Jake Jackman. He said that selling Dembele could derail our season. I think there are many, many other things that can do that. So I'm not entirely sure that's something that you want to sort of hang the entire season on. But I mean, just his ability to dribble, his ability he was so incredibly difficult to shake off the ball, almost as difficult as Luka Modric to dispossess, for example, and his transition play was frequently just as good as Luka. And I saw a stat, you probably saw it as well, since all you do is look at stats all day. On current dribbling success rate in the Premier League and the top five, and Eden Hazard doesn't even make the top five, which is interesting. Top five were Dembele, Matic, Delph, Yaya Toure, and David Silva, which is really interesting. Yeah, so he's going to be difficult to replace, and we can come on and talk about that in a second. But good luck to Musa. He was a joy to watch, absolute joy to watch.
Yeah, I mean, I think it could derail us to an extent. I just agree with you that it's not the only thing that could derail us, because it does leave us very thin at that position. And we will get into potential replacements here in a second. But last on Dembele, any kind of highlights and lowlights in your memory of his time at Tottenham?
Well, I think there was that. You remember the battle at the bridge against Chelsea?
Yes.
You know, I mean, there were a lot of reasons to remember that game, but he was a hero in that particular game, on the field and on the sidelines as well. So, yeah, but again, that Manchester United game as well, where he just controlled the game. But very often it was the case where you knew he was going to come off halfway through the second half, so you kind of knew that he would get us into a position of strength before he departed the field. But he was, as I say, he was a joy to watch, a great player.
Yeah, I remember when we got to watch the match against Bournemouth together, which I think he scored in, by the way. He absolutely dominated it, and he did that throughout his career. I think TV does him a disservice the way they cut from action. Specifically from defending to attack, it kind of bypasses how the ball is carried out, which is something that he was obviously fantastic at. And you bring up Modric, I think, is a fantastic point, because when we sold Modric and brought in Dembele for $15 million, which I think was his release clause, I don't think there was any negotiation there. It was kind of a shock to have such a different player ID on the replacement for Modric. As you said, they were both good at kind of carrying the ball from defense to attack, but Modric largely did it through vision and passing, and Dembele just literally ran it from point A to point B before typically looking for an easier pass. And I think that's a very important lesson to remember as we start to look at replacements, is it's so easy for a player that's been at your club so long, as Modric was then, and Dembele, this is his seventh year at Tottenham, to think that you need that kind of player to replace them instead of just finding somebody that can facilitate that role, albeit potentially in a different way, like a deep-lying passer, which Winks is kind of more on the side of, although he's been taking on more players lately. So as for a replacement, what would you be looking for?
Well, and also don't forget, when Modric left, a lot of us were talking about going out and getting João Moutinho as a direct replacement.
Yes.
Being a much more of a like-for-like, I think that's a very important point that you raise, that you don't necessarily have to go out and get a player who's exactly like the player who's leaving. And I'll come on to Winks in a second. You mentioned Harry Winks, but I think that's where I think we have an advantage. But there's been a couple of, you know, paper talk here. I'm sure you've seen it. Frank Kessie from AC Milan, this 22-year-old Ivory Coast international, looks to be a very, very good player. Sounds like, however, a lot is going to depend on whether Milan are in the Champions League or not next season. So who knows? But again, if they do let him go, whether we'd be prepared to pay, you know, the 35 odd million that's being talked about is completely another matter. And if it comes down to a decision about money to bring in a replacement player, Sky Sports had a story the other day that we'd been looking at this kid, Florian Grillitsch, from Hoffenheim, whose release clause is significantly lower than it would cost us to go and get Kessié. But long term, I think, and you and I have talked about this before, I think Moussa going is just a fantastic opportunity for Harry Winks to own the midfield. And the other options that we have potentially alongside with, you know, Sissoko, Wanyama, Dier, who could fit in different pieces of that potential midfield jigsaw. But I, you know, I'm you know, a huge believer in Harry Winks, and I've always thought that he is the player that we eventually build our midfield around. But it depends. An awful lot is going to depend on whether Poch thinks we need a player, another player like Moussa, or that we can work with what we have and fill the gaps that way. But I think it's basically now down to this, to the sense that it's Harry Winks plus one other.
Yeah, and we have had issues with the others. Dier has been very resilient, but I'm even though he's done fairly well there for about 2.5 years, I'm still not entirely sold on him long-term as being a defensive midfielder. Wanyama, after an amazing debut season, has been hurt or not in form pretty much the whole time, barring, of course, that amazing goal against Liverpool. And then Sissoko, who has kind of found this renaissance in his career playing centrally, which, as I'm sure you'll remember, is what we thought when we signed him, was that we brought him in to kind of be a ball-carrying central midfielder rather than a right winger, and it took until now for him to both be playing there and start to thrive. But it's a very thin position, especially right now with Dier did just return to training today, but with Wanyama out, Oliver Skip has been getting a go, and it's not a problem to have youth players come through, but he's 18, which for me is a little too young for this to be his real breakthrough, if that makes any sense. So I am on the try to bring someone inside. The scouting process at Tottenham is that they typically find 5 players to target at a position and then just kind of wind down from there. It's one of the reasons why you always see loads of stories about Tottenham have contacted or Tottenham are interested in so-and-so, is that they touch base on each player on their scouting list. Kind of divining through some crappy tea leaves, my guess is that you were absolutely right on Kessié and Grealish. I think the other three would be Diawara, Berge, and Zakaria, not sure. But those seem to be the ones we're interested in. It sounds like Berge is not available this window. It would either be a buy and loan back, or we'd have to wait till the summer. But that sounds like the only one that we've really made any progress on. You said Grealish has a buyout clause, which could make that happen faster than others. But I'm not entirely sure that we buy someone in January. The only reason why I'm confident that we may is that if we sell Dembele and there's rumors of interest in George Kevin and Kudu, which I'm not sure why, he hasn't played football in about 3 years now. But if we just sold 2 players, it would make it a lot more likely that we bring somebody in. And a lot of clubs are often worried about signing players in January that they might not have the impact. But I think we could use Lucas as a very good template of bringing somebody in January, have them kind of make spot starts, learn their role in the team, and then the next year start very well. I mean, when we had our whole World Cup hangover, it was Lucas that really carried us through that first month, helped us get those results when we weren't playing particularly well. So it would be interesting to see if we replicated that. But if we didn't replace Dembele this window directly, how do you think the fan base would handle it?
I think it would all depend on results. If we went into a slump that you could point to that departure and say it was particularly related to that, then you would expect to get some blowback from the fans. And obviously, I'm a bit like you, and I don't believe in going out, especially in the winter window, and just buying players because they're available. Because it might not be the right player. It might not be, you know, if there's somebody that you want to wait for a particular position for the summer, but then you have to be very confident that how you're going to fill that gap in the meantime is something that's not going to use Jake's words, derail the season. So I think they have to be very careful, but I think the players that we have are probably good enough to get us to the end of the season. And will also give us an opportunity to assess how that might that might work going forward at the same time that there might be better options of players available. But of course, I mean, Spurs' fundamental problem and has been for a couple of seasons that unless we sell one of the established stars, they're never going to raise enough money by just moving on some of the peripheral squad players to go out and actually bring in a splash signing. And that's essentially what, you know, I was talking about with the Kessie thing was at the way things currently are, that might even be too high a bar for us to go out and actually pay. So, you know, I think, as you say, the matching up the ins and the outs is difficult because you're not going to generate enough revenue from just, you know, moving on some of the squad players to get the sort of player that you want. So it's a tricky one. But I think the players that we have, I mean, you mentioned Sissoko. Sissoko's finally, I think, starting to play the way we expected him to play when we signed him and how he had started, he had, you know, was playing internationally. So I'm optimistic, but let's see how it goes. It's all going to depend on results and how much of if there is a fall off or a slump in some way that can be isolated to the departure of one particular player. And I'm not sure we can do that just yet.
Hmm. There are, of course, rumors of potential departures of other players, whether it be this window or coming soon, surrounding Christian Eriksen and Toby Alderweireld, obviously very important players to the team, both of them stemming from contract situations. Eriksen is not signing his new one, and kind of the scuttlebutt is that it has nothing to do with the wages being offered to him, but that he's holding out for a particular club from abroad that's interested in him. Obviously, Real Madrid have kind of topped that list, although his quotes this week kind of made it sound like that's maybe not it. On the other hand, Toby Alderweireld, obviously everyone will remember the kind of saga last summer, but he's come back. He's played a very important role. He was quoted this week as saying, you know, you can see his dedication to the club on the pitch. Whether or not that continues long term remains to be seen. But what do you think about the future of those two players at the club, and how important have they been, and how damaging would it be if they left?
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Well, I think two things have to be said straight off. They're both professionals. They're tremendously professional players, and they have a very, very good relationship with Poch. So you're not going to get into a situation where they're going to throw a tantrum on the pitch, for example. We're just not going to see that. I think with Eriksen, I think at the end of the day, it's going to come down to whether he wants to go. And, you know, he's 26. He wants to be paid what he's worth. I don't necessarily have a problem with players doing that. I mean, this thing with Levy putting a £225 million price tag on him. I mean, you know why clubs do that. It's to, you know, scare potential buyers away. I mean, it's a bit like that old apocryphal Winston Churchill exchange where he ends up saying, well, we've established whether or not you're for sale. We're just haggling over the price. And it's a bit like that. But as you and I both know, I mean, there's a limited universe of clubs. Obviously, Real Madrid are one of them. There is a limited universe of clubs that would be able to pay that sort of money. But there's also no doubt in my mind, certainly, that Eriksen is in that limited universe of players that could justifiably command it. So as I say, I think for Eriksen, it's going to come down to whether he wants to go. And really, to a certain extent, it's the same with Toby. I mean, we've extended his contract. I don't think we're any further on in terms of getting anything nailed down long term. But again, it's going to come down really to the player. And maybe it's also the speculation about Poch hasn't helped. But I don't think there's any doubt about the player's professionalism, or that we should, in any way, think of not playing them while they're fit. I mean, if they're fit, they would walk into any team in the Premier League. So thankfully, they're walking into ours.
Yeah, agreed. And it is worth noting that you and I joked what now feels infamously last summer about not needing to sign any players, but just try to keep the players we have, which then we did. A little too intensely, but we did renew Pochettino, Kane, Son, Lamella, I believe. Oh, and Dele Alli. So there is a young core that's remaining through all of this, but obviously it is concerning to see Eriksen and Toby's eyes turned a little bit. Whether or not they stay remains to be seen.
It brings up this problem that we have every year. You know, certainly under Poch and the way he has developed the team, from 1 to 11, we are as good as any team in the Premier League. And the problem is we don't have the squad depth to stretch us through the number of games or the number of intense games that we anticipate playing. And so that has always been, you and I had, I think, on a pod last season, we had the idea that, you know, we could get away with not signing a player for each position, or a second player for each position, because in a way it's kind of a vote of confidence of the player that you have there already. But at the same time, you have to be pragmatic and you have to say, well, you know, things are going to happen through the season that you just need a fallback for. Players are going to get injured or suspended, or what's going to happen with Son next month. So, it's one of those things where we have an embarrassment of riches at our chosen positions, 1 to 11. It's when we get beyond that, how do you go out and sign a player and say to them, you're not going to be our first choice, but we want you to come and sit on the bench? And it's not a particularly good sale to people to approach them that way.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we got lucky with Lucas, because right wing was a position we literally didn't have. We just kept playing Eriksen and Dele Alli, with one of them kind of pretending to float out that way. But outside of central midfield, I think you could convince a high-end central midfielder that he would walk into this team ahead of one of Sissoko, Dier, or Wanyama at exactly this moment. Because if Wanyama got back to form, if Dier got on form, if Sissoko keeps this up, that could become more and more difficult. But I agree. It's become the huge issue, and it stems most from Harry Kane. Who would agree to come sit behind him now that it's failed so badly for Jansen, Llorente, and how Soldado's career at Tottenham ended? But I guess we'll just see. Speaking of which, two of those, Jansen and Llorente, both on the chopping block, although Llorente's hat trick certainly doesn't hurt either his value or his chances of staying. Which of those peripheral players that we kind of hinted at earlier do you think might be on the way out?
Well, there's obviously a lot of speculation around Jansen, and you mentioned that Bournemouth game earlier when he scored his first goal for us. And we both liked him at the time, but it was really hard to get a sense that he was developing from game to game, based on the so few appearances that he managed to have. So actually, it was good to see him coming back again after his foot injury for the under 23s this week. But whether that was to prove that he's fit to prospective buyers, who knows? I mean, anything could happen with Jansen. I mean, he may be due a kind of a Sissoko-like renaissance, but who knows? I think it's more likely that Nkudu will probably be moved on. Just the lack of appearances made it difficult for him to ever show anything. So I'd probably expect him to go. You mentioned Llorente. There's been some talk that we'd sell Llorente because he's out of his contract in the summer, but unless we have someone else lined up, I can't see that. But again, it brings you back to this argument about what can we afford? And unless, you know, unless we have somebody identified that we can afford based on the sale of two or three peripheral players, then I really don't think that we'll make that kind of a move.
Yeah. Another thing happening in January, which we alluded to in the Chelsea part, was that Son is about to leave off for South Korea due to yet again. It'll probably be about a month, although that could alter a little bit depending on how they perform in the cup. How do you think Pochettino will handle, either tactically or personnel-wise, the temporary departure of Son?
Well, the simple answer is that basically he can't. And Sonny is probably the player, as you hinted at before, he's the player in our first team right now that we can least afford to lose. I mean, he's in a groove. He's scoring some fantastic goals for us, and he links up well with the rest of the players, including particularly Harry. So I think it's just really hang on and hope. Actually, hope that Lamela and Moura can come in and give us something approaching the kind of performances that we've seen from Sonny recently. But also hope that he doesn't get injured, because we can't really. I mean, the worst thing in the world would be to contemplate playing the rest of the season without him. So there's always that consideration, and that's, you know, why you and I both hate international breaks.
Yeah, that is definitely a concern, but I feel like there's this interesting renewal of patience almost, and with South Korea's usage of Sun, because of the fact that they ensured his partially because it meant that he doesn't have to do military service. So it's almost like we're in a different year. Fans may have been more frustrated that we're losing such a key player for a month, but in return for the fact that he won't have to leave for 2+ years, it kind of feels like, oh, okay, well, if that's the bill, we'll pay it. But I do agree with you. Lucas and Lamela will be very important, just as they were at the start of the season. And we were very pleased to see Lucas getting the minutes that I'm sure he was kind of, maybe not assured, but would have expected. Last season, he had 2 goals, 2 assists in his first 4 matches, all of which while Son was away. I feel like Lamela also had a fairly good start. He had 2 goals and an assist in the first 6. So if we could get that kind of production for them again, that would be great. But to keep it in that mindset, over the last 5 matches, no player has more goals than Son's 5 in the Premier League, and no player has more assists than Son's 3. So that's the kind of return we were getting from a player that is about to depart. Obviously, you can't expect that from Lucas and Lamela potentially combined. But if they can just kind of keep the clock ticking over, like we said at the start of the season, we were picking up points even when we weren't playing well. If we can at least do that, it should be enough in theory.
Yeah, I think that's right. As I say, it's hang on and hope. I had no idea, actually, when you said that we were getting that sort of... I knew he was making a huge contribution, but I had no idea it was to that extent. But, I mean, Moura, every time I see Moura, I like him more. I like the what he gives us even... And again, this is a very Harry Kane thing to say. I like what he gives us even when he's not scoring and when he's not involved in goals. I like what he does off the ball. And I'm we're lucky that we have a triumvirate like that, but clearly Son is at the head of the pyramid.
Yeah, Son's departure, potentially no signings, not the only things to fear for Tottenham in January. Another is the continued delay of the Tottenham Stadium, which will be temporarily known as Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, very creatively. The issues continue to surround the fire suppression system, is the word on the street. This is obviously something that's supposed to be done by August, was supposed to be done by December. Then they said definitely in the new year, kind of hinting towards January. Now it's all the way back to February. If Tottenham do not make it past Dortmund in the Champions League, all that stuff could come up again, about potential lawsuits about their advertising campaign that the only place to watch Champions League in London was the new Spurs Stadium. How do you think you and the fan base as a whole are handling these continued delays in the stadium development?
Well, it's funny. You mentioned about the trade-off between, you know, losing Son for a month, but meaning we're holding on to him. I think there has been a sort of mindset of a trade-off in fans' minds here, because the stadium just looks so absolutely amazing. And I think that has, to an extent, blunted the anger of a lot of fans who about how the club has handled this series of delays, which you and I have talked about before, and you know, the appreciation, the understanding that this is just a massive civil engineering project that was never going never really going to come in on time once we thought about it. The stadium really looks worth waiting for, so I think that's sort of foremost in a lot of people's minds. And you know, I've heard now that March is going to be the most likely opening, although it doesn't seem likely that it's going to be the North London Derby that we're set for the first weekend of March, and that would be a first great game. Although it looks more like according to the boards, the Palace game on March 16th.
Yeah, the police are advising against the opening match being Arsenal.
Yeah, exactly. But you know, as Levy said in the most recent update, there are still tests ongoing. As you said, the fire suppression system is we're still working that out. The reports from the fan visitor test a couple of weeks ago all seem to be particularly encouraging. But as always, we wait for more news from the club. But as you say, if we get past Dortmund and into the last eight of the Champions League, then the first leg of that will be in April. So that would obviously be a fantastic way to open up a new chapter. And I don't even want to, I know you and I have talked about it before, I don't even want to speculate on how that advertising campaign might come back to bite us, quite frankly, because it's like the least of our worries right now, to be honest. But
yeah, it's just very much a mess. What did you make of some people saying that if it isn't ready by the end of March, that we should just stay in Wembley for the rest of the year?
No, I think let's choose the right game, and if we can, let's go and do it, and you know, just especially if we're going to have the top tier restriction continued at Wembley. I know they're applying to Brent Council to have the top tier restriction lifted, but I think they absolutely have to. As soon as it's ready, let's move into it, and let's pick the right game that hopefully people will start to create memories that'll last for a lifetime.
Yeah, and a little bit more shorter term, play Manchester United at the weekend. They've obviously had a massive turnaround since Solskjaer got there, which has fortunately dulled some of the Pochettino out rumors and reports, because they're doing well. But there will obviously be a lot of that narrative rebirthing throughout the week and then during the match as well. What do you think we can expect from this one?
Well, it's interesting. I think, as you say, it's just part of the narrative between the two clubs. And unfortunately, that's given that Solskjaer has had that pretty impressive start. This is obviously the biggest test for them under him. But Guillaume Balague was on radio here the other night saying he thinks Poch will end up at Real Madrid eventually, but he also thinks now Manchester United might be a possibility for him. I'm not so sure. I've never thought, I'll be honest, I've never thought Poch would manage anywhere else in England, especially, you know, what he said the other day about ending his career at Spurs, or, you know, that the possibility of that. But really, who knows? I'm not convinced that Solskjaer, regardless of how he does the rest of the season, will be their manager next year, but, you know, really, who knows? And obviously, as you say, you know, they're going to have a different mindset coming into this game with, you know, being on a roll with the new coach, and it will definitely be a better game than, you know, either of the last two meetings when, you know, we
I know what you're talking about. The last two were great.
No, but I think when I sorry, yeah, when I said better, I should probably have meant more competitive. when we scored in the first minute at Wembley, and then when we beat them here last time, or when we won at Old Trafford at the start of the season, which was actually gave us a hint of that we were going to be playing the kind of way that we played in the previous season, which I think, you know, we were desperate to do at that stage. And as I say, it'll definitely be their biggest test for them under Solskjaer. But I think we'll have too much for them. We'll have too much for them on Sunday.
Certainly, here's hoping. Well, that'll do it for us today, Steve. Thanks so much for lending your thoughts on all of these topics. If people would like to find you or anything you have to say, where can they do that?
Well, as you said at the top, I used to be chairman of New York Spurs, and you can go to newyorkspurs.com, join in the conversation there, or you can get my non-football writing at Northern Slant, northernslant.com. Thanks very much for having me on, Kevin. I'll talk to you again soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.